we see this as a disgraceful and video and inconsistent with the high standards that we expect of every soldier.
An offensive video from a Fort Wainwright soldier prompts an investigation. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 24th of May. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Toklat fire near Nenana grows and shifts direction.
And that sort of got our pulse rate up over some of the places on the Kantishna that we were protecting.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Tech Alaska, working to permit the Red Dog Mine so it can produce for Alaska for another 20 years. Details at reddogalaska.com.
A Fort Wainwright soldier is being investigated after a video of two very young Iraqi boys allegedly being harassed by the soldier surfaced on Facebook. The soldier, Specialist Robert A. Rodriguez, posted the video on May 14th, stating he was bored in Iraq when he shot it. In the clip, he asks the young boys if they are gay and asks them explicit sexual questions. They smile and nod, as it appears they do not understand English. He then asks them about their future plans.
Are you going to grow up to be a terrorist? Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, terrorist. Woo! You're going to plant IEDs? Yeah. Awesome.
The boys both give thumbs up, perhaps in response to prompts by the camera operator, until the older boy seems to begin to understand they are being mocked. U.S. Army Alaska Public Affairs spokesman Major Bill Kuppernall says when the video was brought to the Army's attention, Rodriguez was ordered to take it off the web. Kuppernall says the Army does not condone this type of activity.
I hope that people understand that this is, that we see this as a disgraceful and video and inconsistent with the high standards that we expect of every soldier. And that's why we've taken it so seriously. And that's why we're looking into it immediately, removing it, and then looking into, how that video was posted and why. And we'll determine where to go from there once that investigation is complete.
Kuppernall wouldn't say if Rodriguez has been reprimanded or restricted in any way yet. He was not sure how long the investigation will take to conclude, saying appropriate action will be taken at that time. The candidates on the trail during this year's gubernatorial races are beginning to hear from voters about the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, with memories of what Alaska went through during the Exxon Valdez spill and with an eye toward the plans for offshore drilling in the Chukchi Sea currently set to begin this summer. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The public is watching and hearing news reports from the Gulf of Mexico as BP's Deep Horizon rig continues its discharge of crude oil, now touching the Louisiana shoreline. And the candidates say Alaskans are beginning to bring it up in their campaign travels throughout the state. However, each of them says Alaska's voters also recognize substantial differences between the disasters. In the Gulf of Mexico, BP's working a mile below the surface. In Alaska, Shell's planning to drill at 150 feet. And Governor Parnell says that matters.
There's a distinction there in safe operations and the ability to stop anything. But frankly, I'm in prevention mode. I want to see these things prevented, not so we don't have to face this kind of a disaster. My sense is that the conditions are so different, and yet we want to learn everything we can from what's happened in the Gulf. So it certainly is a balance of factors.
The Shell drilling is a federal project on the Outer Continental Shelf. It is not directed by any state regulatory agency. But Governor Parnell says the state has constantly been involved in the work from the start and is watching every move off the coast.
We've learned a lot from the Exxon Valdez. I think we can learn a lot more from what's happened in the Gulf. And yet at the same time, I think we ought to be moving forward with exploration.
Bill Walker, who's challenging Parnell for the Republican nomination, agrees, but he does see the Gulf spill affecting Alaska's future, if only in more litigation over the issue, and also calls for more scrutiny over what's done here. However, he says while the large fields are offshore, and they're the most likely places that will have any significant effect on the oil pipeline's continued operation, it brings up one push left for onshore oil development.
We should be able to develop ANWR in such a way onshore with the proven technologies that we have. You know, the example that we should be making is that while we're trying to sort out the issues of offshore, let's make sure that we're developed onshore to the maximum extent safely that can be done, and developing ANWR is a classic example of that.
Walker says the Gulf oil spill also puts more emphasis on the need for natural gas development in Alaska. Democrat Bob Poe agrees with the others that the Shell project is being done differently and in different conditions than the Gulf of Mexico wells. He says people he talks to recognize that, and they recognize the state still needs the oil. He calls those people realistic. Offshore in Alaska has been done safely for 30 years, and oil and gas pay the bills here. Support, he says, falls back on the oil companies.
What really needs to happen is you know, Shell and Conoco and others that are planning to do offshore ought to step up and really provide very clear assurances to Alaskans that what we've seen in the Deep Horizon event can't happen here.
However, Poe also says the Gulf spill raises the question of the state's financial resources to deal with any emergency that comes up. Right now, the Gulf of Mexico states get a share of federal income that's about four times more than what Alaska will get. It was a response to Hurricane Katrina damage along the Gulf Coast at the time. However, Poe says now is the time for Alaska to intensify its push for a larger revenue share based just on the potential risk from offshore development. He says Alaska should become a fixture at the doorstep of the lower 48 until the share is increased. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
The Toklat fire is growing. The latest estimates put the blaze burning 25 miles southwest of Nenana at more than 45,000 acres, nearly double what it was Friday. State Fire Information Officer Pete Buse says southerly winds over the last couple of days have changed the active front of the fire.
Where the fire had moved to the southwest before, it started moving more to the east and northeast, and that sort of got our pulse rate up over some of the places on the Kantishna that we were protecting. And we did a fairly extensive burnout around some properties on the Kantishna.
Buse says a successful burnout operation was conducted Sunday to protect a group of cabins along the river. 130 firefighters are trying to protect about two dozen buildings along the river and near East Twin Lake and Mucha Lake. The Toklat fire began from remnants of the Rail Belt Complex fires that charred nearly 700,000 acres last summer on both sides of the park's highway. Buse says some of the properties threatened by the Toklat fire are benefiting from structure protection done in the area last summer.
Done the clearing around them and that sort of thing, so it's not going to be as big a job this time.
The Toklat fire is one of several wildfires that have rekindled this spring from wildfires that started last summer. Buse says the mosaic burn pattern that wildfires leave behind preserve plenty of fuel for secondary burns. He says two factors are allowing more carryover of fires.
Because of the extent of fires that ran late in the season in 2009, combined with relatively low snowpack, and that combination of factors appears to be leaving us with more holdover fires than we would normally see.
Buse says it's unusual, but not unheard of, to have a large fire like the Toklat burn so early in the season. He says additional aircraft are being brought on early in anticipation of hot, dry weather heading into the holiday weekend. The Division of Forestry is cautioning private pilots to stay well clear of active wildfires. Still to come on Alaskan News Nightly, a 5-pound black bear cub makes a controversial recovery in Sitka.
He's emaciated. He's very, very tiny, and within a few weeks we should have him back up to where he belongs.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish, the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says it will take legal action against the state if managers go ahead with a predator control plan on Unimak Island on the Aleutian Chain. The State Department of Fish and Game plans to begin shooting wolves early next month in an effort to boost the island's caribou population. The herd has dwindled to dangerously low levels in recent years, and state managers fear it could disappear if they don't act immediately. But Unimak Island is almost entirely within the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge. U.S. Fish and Wildlife spokesman Bruce Woods says the agency needs to complete an environmental review before it can okay predator control on the island. He says the agency will step in if the state proceeds without federal approval.
We would consider that trespass on the refuge, a violation of the National Wildlife Refuge System Administration Act, and we would refer the case to the U.S. attorney. And it would be up to the U.S. attorney to determine whether or not to prosecute and how that would go.
Wood says he hopes the state will reconsider its plan and negotiate a solution both governments are happy with. He says aerial predator control on wildlife refuges in Alaska is unprecedented in recent history. The state didn't want to weigh in on the federal government's response to the plan. Last week, state managers said they were prepared to go ahead with predator control on the island with or without federal approval. The entire Nome School Board faces a recall election tomorrow. The unusual action stems from an executive session that was held back in January. From KNOM in Nome, Lorelei Kanin has the story.
On January 12, the Nome School Board voted not to renew the contracts of Nome Belts High School Principal Janine Sullivan and Assistant Principal Doug Boyer. Hundreds of people weighed in during the public comment period of following board meetings, hoping the board would reverse their decision. When the board did not take action to reverse the decision, petitions were filed against 4 out of the 5 board members. One of the board members facing the recall election is Kirsten Timbers. She says after the January 12 decision, roughly 20 families shared stories of personal experiences where they or their children felt mistreated. Timbers says numerous people have thanked her for her decision and her vote. Nome citizen Julie Kelso was instrumental in drafting the petition for the recall against Board Chair Gloria Carmen and members Albert McComas, Kirsten Timbers, and Heather Piena. Kelso says the recall is based on the board's numerous violations of the law.
Specifically, the Alaska Open Meetings Act and their own policies and procedures.
Kelso says the lawyer consulted regarding the recall petition, John McKay, found at least 3 violations by the school board in relation to the January 12 executive session.
The motion itself to call the executive session was illegal. It was not clear and specific. And also that the persons discussed in the executive session were not notified of their right to be present. It also does not address the fact that issues might have been discussed in executive session that weren't appropriate for executive session at all, such as eliminating the assistant principal position, which would be a budgetary discussion.
According to board bylaws, budgetary discussions are not permitted during executive sessions. Last Friday, Assistant Principal Doug Boyer received a response letter as to why his contract was not renewed. The letter said the district had not yet decided whether to include an assistant principal in the FY11 staffing budget. Principal Sullivan says she twice requested reasons why her contract was not renewed, yet the board says they haven't seen any such request. And Nome resident Carmel Goldsberry filed the petition application with the City of Nome against the remaining board member, Barb Nichols.
I based Barb Nichols' recall effort on the fact that there was a recall brought forth for the other 4 school board members, and it was attacking the legality of the executive session. So if that is going to be attacked, all 5 board members were in that executive session, so it's only fair for all 5 to be recalled.
Goldsberry says she simply copied the recall application from the one written for the 4 other board members.
Personally speaking, I don't believe in the recall, and I don't think they did anything that was illegal. In my heart of hearts, I hope the recall doesn't go through, but if they're going to recall 4, they need to recall all 5.
Throughout the Gold Rush city, signs tell voters to either vote yes to recall the members or no in support of the school board members. Nome City Clerk Sandy Babcock says she estimates the election will cost the city $10,000. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kinnean.
Anchorage's summer cruise ship season began early this morning when the MS Amsterdam docked at the city's port. The arrival marked the first time since at least the 1980s. Anchorage will receive regular cruise ship dockings during the summer. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
The welcoming mid-morning ceremony crammed onto the outside third-floor deck of the Port of Anchorage office building. To the east, the familiar Chugach Mountains shimmered with the retreating late May snow cover. To the immediate west, about 150 yards away, the scene was unfamiliar, namely the towering upper decks of Holland America Line's MS Amsterdam. Port Director Bill Sheffield noted just how rare such a sight was.
We are very excited about the first ship in a long time, a regular ship, which we've never really ever had a regular ship here at the port, although the Sagaford used to call here in the mid-80s, but it wasn't as regular as what we're doing now with Holland America Line.
Besides Sheffield, the welcoming ceremony included Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan, Anchorage Convention and Visitors Bureau President and CEO Julie Soppy, Captain Fred Everson of the Amsterdam, and American Holland Senior Vice President Paul Goodwin. Goodwin spoke about the number of visitors Holland America would be bringing to the Anchorage port.
Over the next 18 weeks, we will have 9 calls of the Amsterdam here in Anchorage. Each week, we bring almost 1,400 guests shoreside, 650 crew and officers and staff, for almost 2,000 guests. So over the next 18 weeks, we will see almost 18,000 individuals come into the city of Anchorage.
The Amsterdam has already visited Ketchikan, Sitka, Skagway, and Glacier Bay. Its subsequent stops on its 14-day cruise are Homer, followed by Kodiak, the Hubbard Glacier, Juneau, and Victoria in British Columbia before returning to Seattle. On the dock below the third-floor ceremony, passengers were disembarking in a steady stream to waiting buses and carefully directed taxis. According to Soppy, the majority who chose the former will immediately encounter advice on how to spend their day in Anchorage.
We've got our folks from ACVB on the coaches going up to the Egan Center, talking all about Anchorage, talking about the options that they have. And then once they get to the Egan Center, we also have a visitor information desk set up in the Egan Center, again, helping to distribute information and really encourage the folks to get out and explore.
Soppy said about 500 of the approximately 1,400 passengers had pre-booked tours that spread throughout the region.
From Anchorage, it's a good chance for them to go up to Talkeetna to actually do some flight seeing, actually go all the way and fly around Mount McKinley. Some of these passengers are going to go down to Prince William Sound and get right back on another smaller ship to do a great Prince William Sound tour. They're spreading themselves out all over. We also have some art tours through downtown Anchorage, tours to Girdwood.
Sheffield said despite all the visitors from the ship going into and back from the city during the docking, the port had not really increased its security.
We revamped it so it all functions perfectly with our buses coming in and being ID'd before they ever get to the gate. And so there's no time loss there. It's not inconvenience for the customer. We've rehearsed this for the last 4 or 5 months to make sure.
Passengers were to return by 9 p.m. The Amsterdam leaves this evening at sometime between 11 o'clock and midnight and returns to Anchorage in 2 weeks. A similar Anchorage schedule with Friday rather than Monday is set for next summer. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. The Alaska State Elks Association, hosting veterans from Fort Richardson and Fort Wainwright to the Wounded Warriors Kenai River King fishing event. Information at alaskastateelks.com. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
The Yupik Immersion School in Bethel held a graduation ceremony for sixth graders last week. The students will now move to classes where English will be their primary language. The ceremony also marked the last day of class for an important leader that will be leaving the school. KYUK's Shane Iverson reports.
The Bethel Armory is filled with about 150 people watching the conclusion of their students' Yupik Immersion education. Hanging Gus Bucks served as decorations, along with helium-filled balloons. The event was filled with praise for the students and a little fun. Hear parents yogak with their immersion graduates.
Have you ever thought about who you are? I thought of this question, and here's my answer.
Student Kimberly Tippo.
I'm a true Alaskan. I call myself that because I'm bilingual and bicultural.
Ayapun Letnavit is a charter school operating in Bethel. It delivers course content primarily in Yupik. The school opened in 1995 and was named after the teacher that in the early 80s decided that instruction in Yupik Eskimo was just as good as English. Her name is Ayapun Lottie Jones.
There were a lot of skeptics. You know, people are always, you know, been taught in English, and I think their thought is, if my child isn't taught in English, then they won't be educated, where the reverse is also true.
Jones has been watching the school grow, now to 162 students this year, and she says Principal Agatha John Shields has kept the school grounded in Yupik values.
You know, she comes from a strong Yupik language and culture-enriched family. You know, her parents. So she knows a lot about our culture, and, you know, she's really good in, you know, I think, doing paperwork, whatever, organization. So I think she knew the ropes.
Shields will be leaving the school to move to Anchorage for family medical reasons.
It was a very difficult decision.
Fusing the Yupik program with standards-based testing has been a major emphasis for the school and for John Shields.
We teach to the standards in Yupik that are also the same expectations in an English program.
Standardized testing for Alaska students begins in third grade. Those tests are in English, so at that age, instruction is delivered in both languages. The results seem to indicate that the Yupik language students can perform at similar levels to their English counterparts. Math and language scores are above the school district average and above other predominantly Alaska Native schools statewide. But even without the tests, immersion parents are confident that there are long-term benefits to bilingual education. The last two valedictorians in Bethel were originally immersion students. Myra Nanning of Bethel spoke about that at the promotion.
We can be proud to know that our students that come out of Yupik Immersion, the next valedictorian about 5 years from now will be one of the students from here.
Nanning and many others praised John Shields for her work. As she was gifted by her final immersion class, she teared up. She says she's heard from several parents concerned about her absence at the school, but she says it will work out.
Even though somebody goes, we still have to believe. Go with our belief, go with our goal in order to maintain.
The Ayapun Advisory Board is trying to expand immersion studies into junior high and preschool. They're also looking for a new principal. I'm Shane Iverson.
A 5-month-old black bear cub arrived in Sitka by plane last week. It was found near Excursion Inlet, just east of Gustavus. For the moment, the cub is being looked after by the staff at Fortress of the Bear in Sitka, while state officials work to find him a permanent home at an out-of-state zoo. But the story of how the cub ended up in Sitka is a little more complicated. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
About 7 years ago, Les and Evie Kinnear converted two giant concrete tanks that used to belong to the Alaska pulp mill into bear habitats with water features and landscaping. They call it Fortress of the Bear, and tourists can file through and see the two brown bears that currently live in one of those tanks. It's a sunny Wednesday afternoon when I'm led into the second tank, where Les Kinnear is feeding a new cub sitting on his chest with a baby bottle full of goat's milk. The cub weighs about 5 pounds. It's barely the size of a cat. The cub's journey to Sitka began with a phone call from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. An orphaned brown bear cub had been found near Excursion Inlet, according to the phone call, and would be arriving in Sitka the next morning to be held at Fortress of the Bear. But when the plane showed up in Sitka, the cub on board was not brown.
He's a black bear cub, and he's apparently been orphaned. And probably a while ago, because he's emaciated, he's very, very tiny and undernourished. So what we're doing is rehydrating him and beginning to feed him to get him used to feeding. And we'll gradually enrich his diet, and within a few weeks we should have him back up to where he belongs.
The fact that the cub is a black bear and not a brown bear complicated the rules a bit. Fish and Game will take orphaned cubs if a permanent home already has been arranged. But if there's no permanent shelter waiting, the animal is generally euthanized. Tom Schumacher works with Fish and Game in Juneau. He didn't want to go on tape for this story, but he says officials were initially told it was a brown bear cub that had been found. Schumacher says there's a zoo waiting for a brown bear, and that's why the cub was flown to Sitka. On Wednesday, there was no zoo waiting to receive a black bear cub. With the animal already at Fortress of the Bear, Fish and Game decided to bring it back to Juneau for identification. Evie Kinnear says they were worried about the cub's future.
Even if we can't keep it, we don't want it destroyed, that's all.
So when someone from Fish and Game showed up on Wednesday afternoon to take the cub to the airport, Evie Kinnear refused to hand him over.
It was not an unpleasant exchange at all. And Fish and Game has brought, you know, we've worked well with them and we will continue to work well with them. They're, Phil Mooney's been a mentor and, you know, and has really championed our cause, and we appreciate that. And I have nothing to say. I just think that sometimes, you know, that just some of these rules need to be revisited.
The Kinnears have named the cub Seek. It's Tlingit for black bear. Fish and Game officials in Juneau say an out-of-state zoo is in the process of getting a permit to take the cub. So for now, Seek stays put, nursing on goat milk, while tourists and locals drop in to gaze at the new arrival. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Lorelei Kinnean in Nome, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Shane Iverson in Bethel, and Ed Ronco in Sitka. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the University of Alaska Southeast, providing the challenge, the balance, the community, offering new degrees in geography and environmental studies and resources. Information at uas.alaska.edu. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. Alaska's first pioneer home opened in Sitka in 1913. Continuing the tradition of loving care, five more pioneer homes opened over the years, including a veterans home in Palmer. If you are 65 years or older, need assisted living, and an Alaska resident for the past year, you can apply to live in a pioneer home. Information at 888-355-3117 or at the State of Alaska DHSS website. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.